We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Baseball, Minute Maid Park, coming up later on this hour. Chuck Martin, who will be 38 in November, going to get the baseball for the Atlanta Braves. They won 88 games this year, making it to the October Classic, if you will, for the first time since what? 1999. Unbelievable. Okay. I mean, this team made some trade deadline moves, and everything just really fell together, especially when they lost their best player to a torn ACL. Houston, no stranger, 5 consecutive American League Championship Series. They go now to the 3rd World Series. They'll try to win it for a second time. Framber Valdez, man, he was real good his last outing in the Championship Series at Fenway Park against Boston. Can Houston continue with it tonight? It'll be interesting. It will. I think that this has got a little bit of good versus evil. And we kind of want that, don't we? In sports, I mean, look at today. I mean, everything is up and down. Everything is all around. The cancel, what is it? What do they call it? The cancel club, the cancel culture, or what the hell is it? I mean, they're trying to get Tony Romo off the air now. He had the audacity to crack a joke during the broadcast and say a date with Tom Brady's wife, Giselle. So there's all sorts of people up in arms about that. I mean, they can't sleep. Can you blame them? So that type of stuff is going on. There's people ripping Brady for not giving enough, even though he did give a Bitcoin. There's people ripping the guy who got the ball and gave it back, saying he didn't give enough. So, yeah, we like it. You know, it's part of misery, you know. Let's get everyone down and out. Let's get after it in that particular way. And I think you'll see that in this series. Atlanta is certainly the one that I believe most around the United States of America will be rooting for. Houston, known as cheaters. And if you get a chance to listen to this game tonight, you'll hear the whistles in Houston. I don't know what they mean, but they will not occur when Atlanta's at the plate. They only happen when Houston is at the dish. And I know that Boston fans are going crazy about it. I don't even know if I tweeted it out. You know, Boston fans to me were kind of, they were babies, I thought, this year during the championship round. You know, blaming the umps, the blown strike 3 call, then the floodgates opened and everyone's against Boston. No one's going to feel sorry for Boston, okay? It's just not going to happen. Atlanta is a totally different story. They've pieced this thing together nicely here during the final months of the season. They have an opportunity. They're an underdog. Houston is basically minus 40 to the dollar. Translation, you got to lay $140 in order to win back 100. But we'll see. Coming up just a little bit. Charlie Morton, Framber Valdez. I'll keep you updated on that as we go into the night right here on a late night. It's a Tuesday edition, and we love it around here on Tuesdays because we're on later, and we come in after the ladies of Helmets and Heels, and there's a lot happening in the world of sports. We're certainly going to keep you updated if there is anything that happens tonight officially with Deshaun Watson and the Miami Dolphins. Now, there's a lot of stuff out there right now, including, you know, some reports that a deal is imminent, and the only thing that is holding this back is what is going to happen here when it's all said and done, you know, to Deshaun Watson. And Barry Jackson does a real nice job down south. I think he's with the, I don't remember what publication he is actually with, but he does a nice job covering, you know, the local media in Miami, and also does some stuff as far as the national media. And, you know, he talks about what is going on. He does cite the Houston Chronicle that, again, the deal is going to take place, but the owner now, Mr. Ross, wants clarity here. He wants to hear from the commissioner, Roger Goodell, about any potential suspensions. And this thing's really been eerie. If you think back at everything that's gone on with the Deshaun Watson deal, you know, the 22 women who accused him, and then you go to Watson and his lawyers, their feeling was it's a money grab. They want to get paid. We have seen the NFL time and again step up and suspend players for one reason or another. They never did with Deshaun Watson. And you know that they certainly did their internal investigation. There's no doubt that they have been a big part of all that. Now, Houston elected, obviously, not to dress Deshaun Watson, not to activate him. He's a game day scratch because of the distraction, because of all the issues that are going on. And, you know, they have tried their best to peddle him. They are asking for a lot in return, as they should. He's, what, a 25, 26-year-old quarterback who's a dual threat, who's very good. I mean, when healthy, Deshaun Watson's absolutely a top 10 quarterback. Is he a top 5 quarterback? Well, that's a healthy argument. And if you care to get into that, you can. But I think it's intriguing that the NFL did not suspend him. So what does that mean? What have they heard? And we haven't received any, you know, language from them as to what is going on. And I'm sure the reason for that is they would tell us that it is an ongoing investigation and they're not going to comment on anything. But this is very risky here for Miami because you do a couple of things. Number one, you give up on Tua. Okay. Number two, you bring in a guy that right now you have incredible amounts of negativity surrounding this guy. And, you know, I happen to think, I've always felt this way in sports, that if you win, it fixes it all. Now, that doesn't define right from wrong. It certainly isn't a tremendous indication of character, but we've seen it. I mean, I can list 50 players in different sports who have done incredibly damaging things. If they can play, there is room for you. And most fans, not all, but most fans are willing to absolutely forgive if you get it done on the field, court, or ice. So, and we'll track this tonight. It's building as we get moving right here on a Tuesday, and we'll see if anything does come forward with it on the latest here involved with Deshaun Watson. All right, here's what's going on this week. Tomorrow night, we're going to be at Wing It, Old St. Augustine Road. We'll be out there 7 to 9. Looking forward to getting out there tomorrow. I got a couple of scheduled guests that will make it a lot of fun. It's a party that's sponsored by Miller Lite. So we don't get out in that part of the town all that much. Old St. Augustine Road, Wing It, a party by Miller Lite. That'll be tomorrow, 7 to 9. We'll have a couple of tickets to give away for the, I believe it's the Buffalo game. Yeah. So we'll have that tomorrow night. Then Thursday night, we'll be over at Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra. That'll be from 6 to 8. All right. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. Obviously, that includes Miller Lite, $3 wells, $3 wines. We've been making that our normal stop on Thursday. So, and that's it. I travel on Friday to Seattle. So, you know, that's it. Kind of a short week for me. And I'm looking forward to tonight as well as Wednesday and Thursday. It's also, you know, going to be very interesting for me. I really keyed in on Seattle last night. Went back and forth text-wise with John Clayton. He is the sideline reporter for the Seattle Seahawks, and we're going to have John on later this week. But Seattle's the only NFL stadium I've never been to. It's the only NFL city I've never been to. So, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to it, although the conditions last night were brutal. It looked cold. It looked windy. You know, it looked rainy. And I'm taking that red eye home right after the game. I get all lathered up and all rained up, and I got to sit back in an airplane. Hey, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining at all. I love it. I live for it. But I'm looking forward to it. I've heard so much about Seattle. And again, it's the only stadium in the NFL that I've never been to. Now, I've never been to the new one in L.A. Okay, I've been to the Rose Bowl many times and the USC Coliseum a few times, Staples Center, whatever. But I've never been to the brand new building in L.A. Of course, the Jaguars go out there as well later in the season. So I guess really the only one that will be left for me will be the Raiders in Las Vegas. And obviously I was there when Gardner Minshew had that great come-from-behind victory, the final game ever played in the Black Hole in Oakland. The Jaguars, a come-from-behind victory going back a couple of years ago. That was pretty cool if you happen to be in attendance for that one. But last night, you know, and just looking at Seattle, man, they got a lot of problems. They really do. They can't move the football. And, you know, I always provide a disclaimer if I'm going to say something that isn't positive about the actual game. Last night's game sucked. I mean, it really did. There's no other way to say it. It was just a boring football game. And typically when you have a one-possession game, it's going to be anything but boring. But Alvin Kamara had, what, 30 touches in the game. Jameis Winston couldn't find wide receivers. He managed it. Then on the other side, it was just a whole bunch of bad football played by Seattle. Geno Smith, he's a backup quarterback, man. 12 of 22 last night for 167 yards, and Seattle countered that with 28 carries. They only had 50 plays in the game, and they had just over 200 yards. So this sets up well for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I wish I had it in me right now to begin this Tuesday by telling you that Jacksonville is going out to Seattle, and they're going to win a football game. I can't. I can't do that. It's a long trip. They've never won there. I believe they're 0-3 lifetime in Seattle. It is a very long trip. But there's some numbers here, and I'm going to get to them on the other side of the break, that kind of support the knockout here, because that's what it's going to have to be. It's going to have to be a haymaker. It's going to have to be a shot. And Urban Meyer's talked about it. He talked about the deep ball today, or the lack thereof, on his show right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. I thought it was very fascinating, again, just how incredibly honest Urban Meyer was. They're looking for someone who can break things down for them and take the top off the defense. They don't have it on this roster outside of Jamal Agnew, who, hell, 2 years ago was playing defensive back. It's unbelievable. It really is. So, yeah, I'm going to come back. We're going to look at that. There's so many relationships in this matchup, you know, whether you look at Shaq Griffin or whether you look at Brian Schottenheimer or whether you look at Daryl Bevel. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Divine Azigbo. Actually, Divine Azigbo played last night for New Orleans, not for Seattle. My bad. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is Jacksonville has a chance here. They really do. And they are going to have to be able to run the football at Seattle. That is the way that you win this game. We come back, we'll get into that. Also tonight, we are going to do a heck of a lot on college football. What a weekend. I mean, just look at the teams in this state. You got Florida State at Clemson. You've got Miami at Pitt. And, of course, you got the game right here in our backyard, Georgia, playing host to Florida. What an incredible weekend for college football. So we have all that to take a look at as well. Let me see. Looks like the Braves get on the board very early here in the first inning. Let me see what they did. Well, it was a home run by Soler. He led off the game with it. How about that? Here's a guy who battled some injuries. I barely played if at all, in the championship series. You remember they got him midway through the year from Kansas City. Another accusation that this baseball team made that is absolutely proven dividends. And I want to say tonight, with this being played in the American League Park, they're playing American League rules, so he is the designated hitter, and he is. He leads off the game with a home run. So there you go. 1-0 early right now, the Braves in Houston. All right, we got a lot to do. RJ Saunders is here. My name is Rick Ballew. I'm glad to be here as well. Best way to get a hold of us is on the text line. That is 641-1010.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
2-0 Atlanta. Austin Riley with a double. The Braves getting on Valdez early, making him throw a lot of pitches. He's already given up 3 hits, including a home run. Atlanta 2, Houston nothing. Keep you updated on that. The PHS. We're going to have to start going code because I don't want to get canceled.
Never.
They're trying to cancel Tony Romo. Listen, some of these things that are said are just absolutely atrocious when you cross racial, gender, sexual orientation. It's cost people their jobs, as it should. But we got to draw the line somewhere. I mean, you're not allowed to say anything anymore. Tony Romo, you know, like, comes across as, like, you know, everyone's friend. And for the record, I'm not the huge Romo guy. Okay? I mean, the Tony Romo deal is like, oh my gosh, Tony Romo, he can call a play. He's the greatest color analyst in the history of the National Football League, and everyone's gushing about this guy. I think he's good, but I'm not going to ask you if you're offended by it, because clearly there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are offended by it. I heard the clip. I didn't think it was all that bad. I thought it was a tongue-in-cheek comment. You know, Tony knows Tom. I'm sure Tony knows Giselle. And they were talking about the ball and how to get back that ball. And he said a date with Giselle. And, you know, I thought it was a funny deal. No big deal. Let's move along. But no. No way. Wait a minute now. He said what? A date? Oh, no. Sir, we're going to have to remove you as analyst from CBS Sports. How dare you say such a thing? So that's where we are. And again, I see a lot of these situations, and they're awful. John Gruden, awful. Okay? I mean, these seem to be happening all the time. And you know, there's so many different varieties of it. Physical. And we see the situation today. I know this will hit about 2% of our listening audience, but you know, the whole sexual allegations that went on with the Chicago Blackhawks cost a couple of front office types their jobs today, the general manager and stuff like that. I mean, that's brutal. That's awful. And jobs deserve to be lost. But a tongue-in-cheek, a date with Giselle, I don't get it. I just don't, you know? And I'm not trying to sound like a bigot. I'm not. I'm sensitive to so many of these situations. But this one, come on. It was a joke. 3522 says, Ballew, the attempted hatchet job here to try and cancel Romo is an absolute joke. All right, he brings another situation with Chappelle that's going on right now that is really heated. And he is standing his ground. Yeah, but that's much more heated with Chappelle. I mean, that is an incredibly controversial scenario. Tony Romo, it was harmless. But, hey, that's where we're at. And, you know, I'd like to get off the conversation and get on to something else, but I just, you know, every day someone's trying to cancel someone else. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's political, whether it's Hollywood, whether it is sports related. And every once in a while, in my opinion, it's like, what? Really? I kind of felt that way, or absolutely I feel that way. This one here with Tony Romo. All right, you've been pounding Twitter, man. Every time I look up, you got all these fingers moving and all this stuff's appearing. What do you got out early for our listeners?
Early wanted to get everybody's opinion on the World Series before the first pitch was thrown. However, do have two questions for everyone, one being a fun one, another one being on the Jags. You can answer this question one of two ways, either on Twitter, at 1010XL, or on our text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosure, 641-1010. The first question I'll ask for the nightlife, give us a bold prediction. What is your bold prediction slash hot take that you have for the Jacksonville Jaguars as they begin the second half of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Also, with Halloween coming up, the Jaguars going to be playing on Halloween. Let's have a little fun here, as we always do on Tuesday night. Give us a couple of your favorite scary movies of all time, and in your opinion, what is the best scary movie of all time?
Wow. That is so good. I love the original Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis. I love the original Friday the 13th. I love them both. You know, last night I was doing some late work. I slept in a little bit yesterday after about 30 too many Miller Lights on Sunday. And I was just had no reason to go to bed. I was actually diving into some old baseball cards because I'm going to go visit the safety deposit box. I wanted to see if there was some rookies that I could find and maybe I overlooked earlier. So I was doing that. I was at the bar. Okay, still drinking the Mountain Dew because I was really up against it as far as dehydration. And, you know, I'm watching this really bad game, you know. It's a bad football game last night between the Saints and the Seahawks. So, you know, one of my other TVs, I'm looking around. I'm like, there's got to be a Halloween somewhere. And it's time, right? Couldn't find one, but I found the Friday the 13th. I think it was Strikes Again, where it's the little Corey Feldman at the end. He shaves his head and goes kind of crazy,
yeah,
psycho at it. Not a bad one. McFly's in it, the Crispin guy. Remember
okay,
McFly?
Yeah.
He's it. So anyway, I'm getting into it last night, and I haven't seen the new Halloween, but to me, the scariest movie of all time is also arguably my favorite movie of all time, and that is Jaws. That is petrifying.
Oh, so you're classifying that as a horror?
We can put it in a number of different categories.
Okay.
I don't know if it'd be considered a horror. I don't know if it's just considered a drama or
I don't
whatever.
Know. But yeah, no, it is scary.
It's my all-time favorite movie.
Okay.
I'd probably go Shining, though.
The Shining?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
See, I'm not a scary movie guy, so I completely, you know, disqualify myself from this conversation. But I want to know from other people. I mean, you know, horror and scary movies are a huge thing, especially this time of year. So, I mean, you know, give us your opinion on at 641-1010 or on 1010XL. Like, what is your favorite scary movie? Then also, Rick, for you, what's your hot take or your bold take for the Jaguars in the second half of the season? What do you think they're going to do, or what do you want to throw out there to get the listeners talking?
Yeah, I'm looking for, you know, improvement each and every week. I'm realistic here that the way that Tennessee is playing, you know, any chance of bouncing back and trying to win the division is next to impossible. But I want to see improvement from guys. And, you know, I'm also now buying into this way of thinking. If you're injured, you know, there's no longer room for you here. Hate to say it that way, because injuries are part of the game. you know, earlier today it was announced, and let's play that right now, Urban Meyer on his show. I mean, Urban Meyer this week told us what I think we all knew yesterday, that DJ Chark was out for the remainder of the year. That's not a surprise, but today's announcement with the knee on AJ Can, for me, was a surprise.
AJ Can, I believe, is out for the season, and Lindner should be back. You know, it's all now. He had an MCL sprain, and he had a high ankle sprain, and we're waiting on the high ankle. I just saw him in the training room just now, so I'm very hopeful to get him back pretty soon.
All right. I want healthy football players. Guys who historically, like Brandon Lindner, like DJ Chark, I think it's time to move along. And I say that with the utmost respect, especially DJ Chark, who is one of my favorite players on the Jaguars team. He's been injured 3 out of 4 years. You know, last night we talked about a little bit, I had some folks throw me a franchise tag question. You're going to pay him $16 million, $15, $16 million? You can pay him $1 million a game next year? No. You cannot do that. They have to address wide receiver and going out and get a young guy who can run. Now, A.J. Can is interesting. He's been serviceable. He got a second contract. Remember, he was a third-round pick in 2015. He has been, in my opinion, average. So what does that mean now going forward? Well, it's all on Ben Bartsch. Let's find out if Ben Bartsch can play. He's got 11 more games. Let's see what he does. It would be really nice to see Ben Bartsch take advantage of this opportunity and be a guy that you know is going to be either right guard or could end up going to the left guard if, in fact, they do cut Andrew Norwell after the season. $15 million salary is what he's carrying, and there's zero dead money. So you can cut him, and you don't own a nickel. That's enormous. Now, he's graded out well. He's done a decent job, really 2 years now. He's played well, but he's among the highest-paid left guards or guards total in the NFL. At one point, when the Jags signed him, he was the highest-paid guy. He no longer is, but I want to say he's still in the top five. I'd also like to see Walker Little. Yeah, I'll put my hand up. I was ready to put him up next to Bocelli and put him in the, you know, put him up there in the retire the number and the Ring of Honor. Put him up there. You know, we heard, was it prior to the Jaguars? I should know that. I've been the sideline reporter for 8 years. I've been here since the franchise began, for crying out loud. I'm not a novelty guy, though.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah, you don't do that.
No. Maurice Jones-Drew needs to be the next guy to go up there. He deserves it, in my opinion. But I want to see Walker Little get some burn. Now, I don't want to see it at the expense of an injury. You know, I mean, again, this is their livelihood. I don't wish injuries upon anyone. I don't want Cam to go down. I don't want Taylor to go down. You know, Juwan Taylor to go down. I don't want that. I mean, who wants to see a guy get hurt? No. But I want to see Walker Little play. What I hope is in 2022, two-fifths of this offensive line has Walker Little and Ben Bartsch. Two draft picks over the last 2 years. That's what I would like. And then that totally opens things up for the other three spots. Again, huge money for Cam Robinson, huge money for Brandon Lindner, huge money for Andrew Norwell. I think maybe, if I was to guess, I'd say one of the three returns. Possibly two. But if I had to pick a number, I'd say one. One of the three. Now, again, I don't know. This is just my guess. So, you know, it's not like I'm sourced on this. Nothing is leaked, especially with 11 games remaining. But, you know, and they love Lindner. Everyone loves Lindner. And when he's healthy and he's playing, he's a good football player. But, you know, just take a look at the resume. He's had 1 year where he has gone 16 games. And, you know, you can never guarantee health. But I just think investing more money on guys who have a history of being injured, for me, that is risky. Hey, Linder was the guy who, you know, got into the scuffle the last time the game was played here when Jacksonville won. He got into it with Michael Bennett, and then a play later, Quentin Jefferson was ejected, and you know, he walked by and some fans here threw some stuff at him, and he tried to go up into the stands, and it was just absolutely chaotic. So there is a little bit of bad blood, but all of those principles are gone outside of Brandon Linder, who, as we know, won't be playing in this game. Instead, it's going to be Ty Shatley at center. You know, I've talked to some linemen. I've talked to, and I haven't gotten, you know, a concise answer yet. There is a drop-off when you go from Linder to Shatley. I don't know if it's a noticeable drop-off, but there is one. And again, I always ask about the offensive line because to me it is the hardest group to analyze. It just is. You know, I mean, listen, we can all sit there. You can hold a beer and you can tell if a wide receiver gets separation or if a defensive back can't cover or if a linebacker over pursues and has no gap integrity or if a running back can't break a tackle or if a quarterback has, you know, happy feet. But once you get to the offensive line, man, there's a lot of things in there that I think the common football fan doesn't understand. And I'm going to include myself on that list. Seems like when I talk with former players, most of my questions are about the offensive line. It's very hard to understand, especially when you have multiple blocking schemes. And Jacksonville's doing everything multiply now. They've gone man-to-man defensively. Now they're playing more zone. Urban Meyer talked about that. George Warhop's back. I mean, there are times where they play man, but they play more zone as far as your blocking principles. So, yeah, and I'm going to get to that coming up here on the other side. That's the thing that I looked at today when I was really getting ready for the show and I was preparing about how does Jacksonville pull off this upset? Okay? Run the football. And I got the numbers to support it. We'll get to it on the other side. Good to have you with us. 641-1010, the number. We've got all of these rolling in. The Exorcist, Carrie. Carrie was just, that was another Stephen King. That was bizarre. Sissy Spacek, and that was a young John Travolta. You ever seen that with the pig's blood? I think it's the pig blood that they doctor it up. So Carrie gets the homecoming queen, but they got a pile of blood hanging from the rafters, and they tip it.
I'm not getting it all. That's scary.
Oh, and then she goes insane.
Oh, no.
What she does is she smokes a little toad, okay? And all of a sudden, she's burning buildings, man. She's like looking at cars and flipping cars, and oh, she's doing it all.
I don't know how people are able to watch that stuff and then go to bed. See, I wouldn't be able to go to bed after watching.
Yeah. But that's not real. You know, that's like you can use your imagination and be like, okay, The Exorcist was like, whoa, you know, with Linda Blair and all of that, it's like, could something like that actually have happened before? I mean, there has been exorcisms. There has been, you know, scenarios where that take place. It's just a very, you know what's great about The Exorcist? It's kind of like The Godfather. Every time I see it, I learn something new. Not a lot of movies that you know, you can do that with. Every time you go back, you might have missed a point here, you missed a point there. That seems to come in that movie, especially early when you have the, you know, when they're out and they're digging and you know, they find whatever it is, the sign of the devil, archaeologists and all that type of stuff. It's great. It is. Then you got a couple of dogs / wolves going after one another, which is sick, dog fighting. We won't get into that. I told you last night I'd do turtle races, but I'm not going to do dog fighting. Yeah, Exorcist is brutal. Yeah, getting a lot of those rolling in. All right, we'll check it on the other side. Let's get to this, though. I got some numbers to support why I think, along with a big, big left hand, okay? A big one from the ankle. This is how the Jaguars can pull off a win.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Braves Astros, 2-0. We've played one. Charlie Morton allowed a hit and a walk, so he threw 26 pitches. That's not good. That means he'll be out in about four if that stays the same. Only 21 for Valdez, even though he allowed three hits, including a homer. 2-0 ATL after one. Loving all these selections that are coming in. You getting a lot, too, on Twitter? Getting a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, got a couple on Twitter so far as top five scary movies. Where do you place them? And someone agrees with you that Jaws is the number one scary movie, in his opinion. He said because, you know, of a big shark. Number two being The Goonies. Number three, Misery. Four, Shawshank Redemption. Mm. And number five, Jaws 3, because it sucked so bad and was painful to watch.
All right. I don't agree with 2 through 5. I love his first selection. 6953 says, I think Exorcist is on his own level like Godfather. Cape Fear, maybe De Niro's best acting job. Yeah, he is great in that. Nick Nolte's very good in that, too. What, a young Juliette Lewis, right? Cape Fear. Shining, yeah. Absolutely. Expect that. 3522, Phantasm. Freak me out. I remember the name Phantasm. I know I've seen that movie. It's not ringing a bell, though. 3022, Baloo, my personal scariest movie is Birds. I've been scared for life. Isn't that old school? Isn't that old Al Hitchcock? Birds? Wasn't that movie made in like the 60s? Unbelievable. 1808, Baloo, The Exorcist is still crazy, yada, yada, yada. Try sleeping after listening to Tubular Bells from The Exorcist. Good luck with that. Tell you what, bro. Before I go to bed, I load up on melatonin and NyQuil. I'm going to sleep like a baby. Jacksonville. In Seattle. How do you win this football game? You got to run the ball right at him. You realize after this week, Jacksonville moved up 3 spots. They're now 10th in the NFL in running the football. 121.8 yards a game. And that really speaks volumes considering they're a 1-5 football team. And if you look at their play selection, it's still real top heavy and it needs to change. The Jaguars have thrown the football 216 times this year. Okay? They've only run it 141 times. But I just gave you the info. They're very productive when it comes to running the football. And if you look at Seattle, all right, they defensively allow 134.1 yards a game. Okay? Seattle is not a good run football team. They're not a good defensive team to begin with. All right? They're allowing 414.7 yards a game. I want to say that is 30th in the NFL, maybe 31st in the NFL. So they're giving up a ton of yards. They're giving up yards on the ground. The thing that is a little bit mystifying when you look at Seattle is their scoring defense is better than I expected. And last night's game helped that because it was very low scoring. But they're 14th in the NFL. They're only allowing 23.1 points a game. All right, and Jacksonville's only scoring 19.3. So, you know, you do the math there. That seems to figure that they're going to be somewhere in the, you know, 20-21 range if you base it on that. And, you know, I understand that that is subject to change. It'll be interesting to see what the conditions are like in Seattle. And, you know, what does Jacksonville do as far as not turning the football over? Jacksonville has to get better on third down. I hammer that if you listen to me regularly. I mean, right now, so far this year, third down offense, the Jaguars are 31st in the NFL. They're 21 of 67. That's 31%. That has to improve. You know, Bobby Wagner is a great defensive player. They got some talented guys in Seattle, but this is a game where I honestly do believe if you can score 23, 24 points, that should be good enough to win the football game. Seattle can't do anything offensively, you know, outside of Metcalf. And he made a, you know, he had that great touchdown last night, and we saw that. And Geno Smith, you know, I think Jacksonville will try to do some things to create a little bit of havoc there when it comes to perhaps blitzing Geno Smith and try to rattle him at least somewhat. You know, if you look at Seattle, they've now lost three in a row. Seattle has not won a football game this year at home. You know, the dreaded 12th man, supposed to be an incredible environment. Indianapolis went in there on opening day and beat him 28-16. They scored 16 points at home with Russell Wilson. A week later, they lost 33-30 to Tennessee. You probably remember that game. I know I do. And that was the best offensive output all year long for Seattle. They went to Minnesota, got blown out 30-17. Late touchdown. Again, couldn't score offensively. 49ers, they won a ball game there, 28-21. Rams beat them, 26-17. At Pittsburgh a week ago, we all remember what happened back and forth with the field goals, 23-20 the final, and then last night, now on a short week, 13-10. So if you look at what they've scored this month, they put up 10 against the Saints, 20 at Pittsburgh, 17 at home against the Rams, and they did win a ball game a month ago going into San Francisco and scoring 28 points. This is an offense that had total just over 200 yards in total offense last night. And they are just not playing well. I got to believe there's a massive hangover going on in Seattle. They've lost 5 of 6 and 3 in a row. And, you know, they're talking now. I mean, I saw Russell Wilson rumors today about maybe trading him. Apparently, he's going to come off the injured reserve next week. There's no threat of him playing against Jacksonville. But, you know, there's been some talk. Maybe he's right now the opportunity to move him to a contender. I still think Russell Wilson can play. You know, I think when healthy, he's still top 6, top 7 quarterback in the NFL. But my goodness, are you ever, you know, getting the lucky draw here that instead it's going to be Geno Smith who is going to be your quarterback coming up on Sunday. So, you know, can this team run? That's what it really comes down to, in my particular opinion. If they're able to do that, I think Jacksonville will get the victory on the road. And just saying that is incredible, man. I just never would have believed it. You know, I've said it many times over now. I thought this was the most difficult game for this football team during the 2021 season, going all the way out to Seattle. Now it feels like they can go out and win. It's going to be a very low-scoring game. What? Seattle's favored by 3, 3.5. I want to see the total is right around 40. Did it go up to 44? Let me check this real quick before the break. I would live under, though. No question I would. Let's see. Yeah, it's 43 and a hook. So it's 3, 3.5, 43 and a hook. We'll see what the public does with their money. We'll check it. Again, I'm out here Friday because I'm traveling to Seattle. So we're going to have the Philly Rooster with us tomorrow night. Rafael Esparza with us on Thursday night. But we'll, you know, we'll get a little bit of an earlier look to see if some folks have jumped on this. Shaq Griffin, DK Metcalf. Is that your matchup? Or do you double cover Metcalf and allow Griffin to go to the other side? That's the one guy that can beat you. That's the one guy who was legit. Man, is he fun to watch. DK Metcalf. All right, let's get ready for our second hour. The Atlanta Braves have put up another run. My goodness, 3-0 right now, Atlanta, in the top half of the second inning. Let me find out what happened here. Come on, Helter Skelter. I'm trying to do a radio show. At least you can do is, I mean, it's 2021. It shouldn't take a long time for this computer to update itself. Peterson with the, actually, it was Solar with the, was it a sack fly, perhaps? I think it was a sack fly. So he gets the ribby, and it is now 3-0. The Atlanta Braves, we are still in the top half of inning number two. Let's get ready for our second hour. We got much more to get into. Best way to get a hold of us is on the text line, 641-1010. You can also get me on Twitter, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hi, Kirby Smart says, JT Daniels, you're up. A little surprised by this. Only because Stetson Bennett has played, you know, he's been good enough. And Georgia's defense is ridiculous. But that has been announced. And, you know, the thinking on the other side is that Dan Mullen's going to go with Emory Jones. He will be the starter. Anthony Richardson will get some playing time. But we shall see. That number continues to sit around 14 and a half. Speaking of which, that's the amount of points Clemson is allowing a game. We talk about this very bad Seattle offense that we saw last night. How about Clemson? They're 4-3 on the year, yet defensively, they're allowing 2 touchdowns a game. I mean, they lost 10-3, we know, to Georgia. Georgia had the pick six. They blew out South Carolina State 49-3. Remember the two-hour rain delay? Georgia Tech came back out. They were at goal line. They nearly won that game. The Yellow Jackets, a 14-8 final. They lost in Raleigh, all right, 27-21 in two overtimes. They lost to NC State. They beat BC 19-13. They won at Syracuse 17-14. And last week, I thought they were physically pounded at the line of scrimmage by Pittsburgh. 27-17. I mean, that is their last. Look at these look at the offensive scoring here. 17 against Pitt, 17 against Syracuse, 19 against BC, 21 in double overtime against NC State, 14 against Georgia Tech in a field goal against Georgia. What in the heck has happened to that offense? So we'll see what happens. They got some more guys injured, too, in the line of scrimmage. That's what Dabo Swinney was talking about a little bit earlier today. Florida State trying to get healthy. Both their guards couldn't play last week. Love Taylor, Devontae Love Taylor, did not play. I guess Daniel Gibbons, the Notre Dame transfer, played early in the first quarter, went out with an injury. I've had a lot of different line combinations there. You know, it's very similar when you look at Florida State to what I said about the Jaguars. Florida State's had 6 games this year where they have run for more than 200 yards a contest. They are the best players on the team. I mean, there's no question about it, in my opinion. And, you know, that includes when you allow Jordan Travis to run. Jayshon Corbin and Trayshon Ward, they're average, let me see this here, they're averaging 7.9 and 7.4 per carry. 86 carries, 683 yards for Corbin. And what is the first thing we always hear about the offensive line at Florida State? It's terrible. They're doing a decent job this year. And it's been a patchwork offensive line. They've had five different offensive line combinations trying to get healthy. But, yeah, they're running the ball. Ward, 57 carries, 419 yards, 7.4. Florida State's not a good come-from-behind team. If you got to pass the win, you know, that's a problem. You know, look at it. If you look at receiving, it's scary. The tight end McDonald has 18. That leads the team. Then it's two running backs, 15 and 13, Corbin and Ward. Your leading wide receivers are the transfer from Kansas, Andrew Parchment, and then, you know, Wilson. They each have 12 apiece. I mean, what? There's been, what, six games, right? What is Florida State? Six or seven games in? Should know they're right. They're seven games in. They've played seven games. Their leading wide receiver has 12 receptions in seven games. And what is this, Bob Greasy and the 1972 Miami Dolphins? All the hype on Malik McClain, who looks like he's got a chance. They, like, go to him once early in the game and never go to him. He's got nine receptions on the year. Keyshawn Helton has 11. Of course, if he had 12, they would have beaten Jacksonville State. But that is that. It's going to be a fun weekend in college football. 2005, Ballou. Should the Jags trade for a number one wide receiver for the remainder of this season? Seems to me that would make a huge impact. Well, here's where I'm at with that. I don't think I would. And here's why. First off, please provide me with some names. Give me some ideas. I want to save my money for 2022. Now, I know the most convenient names you're going to tell me is the injured Michael Thomas in New Orleans, and you're going to tell me OBJ in Cleveland. I'm not going near OBJ. He's got a $15 million price tag for the next 3 years, 15 a season. I don't think you can trust him anymore as far as his health. You know, he's a diva. And I don't know if going to a losing organization, a rebuilding organization, is the type of guy you want to bring in at this point in his career. So, as tremendous as he has been, those are the reasons right there why I would not go in that direction. Thomas has a relationship, we know, with him from Ohio State. Still, I mean, look at those numbers. We went over it, I think, last week at some point. They're like $22, $23, $24 million a year. You know, and you just can't give that type of money to guys who are coming off injuries. Give me another name. Who else are you talking about? You know, I've seen Brandon Cooks is available. Houston's not going to trade him within the division. And it seems like he makes a different stop about yearly. But if you have a name and it's a nice contract, yeah, I may consider that. But I just haven't seen one. And at this particular time, I'm going to say no. Do not make that move now. If you're going to make a move, do it during free agency where you're forced to overpay, but you know that you have Trevor Lawrence, a bona fide deep threat, and you can get him signed up for, let's say, 3 or 4 years. Fresh money, he's happy. The last thing you want is a guy coming over here who's been injured, then there's talk of more, you know, another contract, and that's just a hassle. Good question. I say no at this point. Much more on the movies here. You know, a ton of stuff on the movies tonight. Everyone wants movies here. Is Clemson Final Four dominance over for a while? I still think they're the beast in the ACC. You know, it's a down year. They got to solve the quarterback situation. They played two quarterbacks against Pittsburgh. They're just not running the ball the way that they used to. I mean, listen, Travis Etienne, look at his numbers. Look what he did in his career at Clemson. You know, Justin Ross trying to come back from that neck injury. He's their go-to guy, but he hasn't been, with this passing offense, nearly as electrifying as some of the other Clemson wide receivers who have come out. Where I'm a little bit surprised in what I've seen with Clemson, they're not as physical in the ditch as they have been year after year after year. Really intrigued to see what happens. I'd love to sit here and tell you I'm going to pick Florida State to win this game. If this game was in Tallahassee, wow. I mean, I really would weigh that. I think Clemson is going to be PO'd about everything that happened a year ago with that whole trip and the COVID. And, you know, they flew to Tallahassee, and then that game got called. Dabo was clearly upset about that. I just think you're going to see a real good coaching job by Clemson. And here's the thing that you cannot deny. Clemson has better talent than Florida State. Now, Florida State has really improved in a lot of different areas, including they're finally getting away from stupid penalties. I don't think the offensive line had a penalty on Saturday. I believe their last four games combined, they've only had 15 penalties. I mean, go back to early on in the year, including that Notre Dame game, Jacksonville State game. They were double-digit penalties or, you know, nine penalties. So they're getting a little bit smarter. You know, they still have some issues with their east to west, their linebacking core. Every time I look at Herb Gainer, or not Herb Gainer, Herb was the daddy, right? What is it Herb the second? I should know this. Maybe it's Amari Gainer. He just looks like, I went to school with his daddy, Herb. I mean, he was a wide receiver. But he's so close, but there always seems to be something missing. You know, he's got a little bit of that over-pursuing and doing things like that. He's just a little bit undisciplined, and that's scary because a lot of his tackles are way downfield. You know, the best player on this team has been Jermaine Johnson, the kid from Georgia. He's done a real nice job off the edge. Kier Thomas has done a real nice job off the edge. All of a sudden, though, they're really beaten up in the ditch. You know, if you look at Robert Cooper, he has played well. They've got one, Malcolm Ray. As a matter of fact, I think he got the start last week, and it, you know, really hasn't worked out there. Fabian Lovett, when available, when healthy, has done some pretty good things. Their secondary has gotten just trashed. I mean, outside of Jarvis Brownlee, he's played some really good football. I mean, I think the most athletic of them all is Travis Jay, and he's not even starting right now. He had a big fumble the other day on a punt return, or I think it was a kick return. So, you know, I like the young kid, Kevin Knowles, you know, a four-star, true freshman. He made a nice play last week. So, you know, they've got some players, but they don't have as many talented players as Clemson. You just look at the way Clemson has recruited under Dabo Swinney the last several years. But I get the feeling that this thing is going to change. And this is a big game. There's no moral victories in Tallahassee. Don't waste my time with that. I'm still pissed that a lot of people try to give him a moral victory against Notre Dame. All right, doesn't work. But they are becoming a better football team. And it just feels like they're buying into this staff. And they're buying into Mike Norvell. And certainly I didn't think that after what we saw very early in the year. I think it'll be very hard for them to win at Clemson. They are going to have to play a perfect game. And they're going to have to make some big plays. Jarvis Brownlee earlier in the game against UMass dropped an interception. Then he had one later. But, you know, we've talked about that around here with Shaq Griffin and with the Jaguars. Knocking the ball down is not good enough. If you're going to win a football game like this, you're going to have to make big plays. And I think that crowd will be ready to go. This is still Clemson, Florida State. You know? What an unbelievable setting. The first time I ever went was in 88. The punt Ruski with Leroy Butler and the, you know, the punt return by Deion Sanders. And they joined the ACC in 92. And I went out to that particular game where they benched Charlie Ward and went with Danny Cannell. Then they went back to Charlie Ward. And I think he hit Dexter Carter. I don't know if it was that. No, he hit Kevin Knox for the game winner. But it was unbelievable in 92. I would never miss that trip. I used to love going to Clemson. And every time I ever went to Clemson, Florida State won. I'm 4-0. I think it made the 4-0 or 5-0 lifetime, including the Bowden Bowl, the original Bowden Bowl. Florida State should be flying me in to Clemson on Saturday and then fly me from there straight to Seattle. Let me check my phone. I don't see anything from anyone over there. And what's up, RJ? I never lose when I go to Death Valley, whether it's Death Valley at LSU with Florida State or if it's Death Valley and Clemson with Florida State. Why aren't they all over me to get me there to bring them a W?
They need to show you some love. I mean, you know, you're basically calling yourself the good luck charm for the team. And they need to swing by and get you out there. Rick, we need you in the vicinity.
Duval! Home run. Adam Duval. 5-0. Braves. Top of the third. This is a savvy team, Houston. I watched Boston clobber them in the first three games. They only won two of the three, but they were putting up, what, 9-10 runs a game. And then all of a sudden, Houston bounced back and held Boston to three runs in the last three games. But enjoy this while you got it. And, you know, even though you've had a little bit of time to rest, the best thing that can happen here tonight for the Atlanta Braves will be to get some distance out of Charlie Morton. You know, can the guy give you six innings tonight? Let me take a look at him before we get to the break here. Morton's got two innings, 38 pitches. That's an average of 19 per. He threw 26 in the first. He's walked a couple. So, you know, can he give you six? You want to, and that's going to be it for Valdez. They're going to go to Garcia. Now, Dusty Baker is going to have to get to his bullpen with no one out in the third inning. One of the greatest things that I've ever been able to experience when I worked in Chicago was, you know, when I did nights, it would be 10 p to 2 a here, 9 p to 1 a in Chicago. But watching all these games, and you know, I love watching San Francisco and Barry Bonds come up, but that was always the Achilles heel for Dusty Baker. How to handle the bullpen. And it didn't matter where his stops were as the skipper, the bullpen is what bit him. And the bullpen is the reason why he does not have a World Series ring. And now here you are in game one, and he's already going to the bullpen with no one out in the third inning. All right, we got much more to do. Good to have you with us tonight. Again, tomorrow night we'll be out at Wing It on Old St. Augustine Road. That's 7 to 9. Mr. Chubby's on Thursday from 6 to 8. That is in Ponte Vedra. Hope to see you out there. Myself, I'm Rick Ballew, along with RJ Saunders.
Then we sleep through day, then we play all through the late night. Sleep through day, then we play all through the late night. All through the late night. See who play, don't you hate, all through the late night.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Five nothing Atlanta, game one. I don't know what I did with my all through the late night. I don't know what I did with with my text line. Somehow I lost it. Craziness happens there late at night, especially on Helter Skelter. Oh, we were talking about scary movies. Did you see the report that came out today, RJ Saunders?
About what?
They, through DNA, they found, forensically, they were able to confirm today another victim from John Gacy back in 1977. Now, Gacy's the one who, in Illinois, murdered these teenage to early 20-year-old men and buried them in the crawl space in his home. John Gacy.
That's creepy.
Bro, forensics. It's creepy. We're talking about a guy who's been missing since 1977. They found that out today. It's 2021. Forensics are unbelievable.
So they're still kind of, what, investigating this case? Or just, you know, looking back at it, now we're finding, you know, even more? Mm-hmm. Or is it something to where they're saying, like, no, we're, like, still on the case? We, you know, he's probably good and well, I won't say that, but he probably has passed, but,
right,
you know.
Oh, Gacy?
Yeah.
Oh, he got fried.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, we're finding out more stuff, man. That's a creep right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Hayes Carl and I were talking about on our podcast. I mean, you had the they believe they found who the actual Zodiac killer is. And what's amazing about the Zodiac killer is much like who am I thinking of here? The Jack the Ripper. They're really the only two serial killers that were never caught. So, you know, I think there's something about them wanting to be caught. So historically speaking, they're going to get the attention that they desperately want. You know, all these folks, or a lot of them, including the Zodiac killer, man, he was always dropping letters and notes to the San Francisco Chronicle and, you know, it's kind of like Son of Sam. He was doing the same thing to the New York tabloids. it's unbelievable. They, you know, they're so narcissistic that just committing these awful crimes isn't good enough for them. They need all the attention that goes along with it. But I can't believe that they confirmed that today. And then a couple of weeks ago, they think that they now know who, in fact, the Zodiac killer was and that he died a couple of years ago. So there's not a lot of good true crime out there that I haven't read it, you know, that is still out. That's why I'm reading all this fiction now, and I've kind of had it with the fiction. Hey, but you know what? You're not going to see it like that anymore. It's gone. It's impossible.
Right. Right.
Because of surveillance and forensics,
yes,
you can't do it. Now, we still get these ridiculous spree shootings and all that type of stuff, drive-bys. But, you know, the days of literally being an architect and planning what you are going to do and then doing it, those days are done.
For the most part, yeah. There's still some times where I feel people, they do calculate and leave hints about what they're going to do, but to have a, you know, I planned this for 20 straight weeks and not be found out, impossible now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still crazy.
Which
even
is a good thing.
Yeah, but it's crazy, like, for back then, for people to have such calculated and, you know, just thoughtful attempts at what they were going to do. I forget, what was it, Jeffrey Dahmer?
Well, Dahmer was in Milwaukee, and he hit all the gay bars, and he was the one who kept stuff in the freezer and,
yep,
and tanks and, you know, slept with them when they were dead and, you know, became a cannibal. He got caught, and he got caught a couple of times, and they let him go. Pretty bizarre. But you had people that are starving for attention, like David Berkowitz in New York. I mean, Son of Sam, he wanted to be caught. He didn't even go to trial. He admitted everything. The BTK, man, the guy took 10 years off in Wichita. Dave Rader, he took 10 years. He had gotten away with it. And then he went down into the bowels of his church and fired off some letters, and they got the hard drive from the computer. That's how they caught him. So, anyway, fascinated by this, though. And, you know, he was a young kid. It's in 1977. I think he was a 21. So I believe his mom and dad are still alive. And just think about that for a moment. Imagine that being your son, and he's gone, and you have no idea what happened. You know, did he run away? Did he leave and go to another country? Has he been dead? I can't think of anything worse as a parent not knowing the answer to those type of questions. And I'm sure it's one of those deals that you get up every single day and it crosses your mind. And then you get a phone call today hearing about something that happened in 1977.
Still to this day trying to get over it, like you said. And then something, you know, else pops up now.
0796. I'm sure you talked about this last week, but Josh Allen's play on fourth down against the Dolphins was huge. He is the best player on the Jags defense this year. Absolutely, I talked about it. It was phenomenal. He stuffed Malcolm Brown right at the line of scrimmage. And it's 2 weeks in a row that he has done that. And, you know, I went through the play-by-play because that was, you know, a fourth and one from Miami's 46. And Josh Allen, as well as, who am I thinking of here? Chappelle Russell. Chappelle Russell was the second man in on the hit. And Jacksonville takes over right there at Miami's 46. And you're thinking, wow, man, they have an opportunity to get down here and kick a field goal. What happens? False start. Move you back 5 yards. So it's first and 15. Trevor Lawrence, a one-yard loss. Okay. It's now second and 16. Then a sack. Loss of 4 more yards. Bro, it's third and 20. And he turns around and hits LaVisca Chenault Jr. for 14. I think it was. No, it was 11. It was 11 because it left a fourth and 9. And Jacksonville calls a timeout with 5 seconds to go. They go up, they line up. Everyone thinks it's going to be an attempt of a Hail Mary. Miami calls a timeout. So there were 2 timeouts called without the ball being snapped. How about Trevor Lawrence as a rookie saying, we can do this, man. We can do the slider kill. Speaking of a great serial killer term, how about the slider kill?
The slider kill.
Yeah, the play they made there on 4th and 9, the slider kill. I don't know. Maybe I'll write a book. Maybe I'll write a fiction book. Obviously, it'd be fiction, but I'll call it the slider kill.
I mean, listen, those kind of books sell, Rick.
I know. And he throws him open across the line of scrimmage, across the first down line, and you get a timeout with 1 second remaining. Are you kidding me? Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because Josh Allen has played really good football. His last 2 games, he's had 11 pressures. He's had 14 tackles. He's had 4 tackles for loss. He's had a batted down ball. He's had 2 stuffs at the line of scrimmage. And, okay, only 1 sack to show for it. But he's playing better football. That's from the 0796. Absolutely. No doubt. And I'd like to see a little bit more now with Chase on. Thought he played well 2 weeks ago. Not as many snaps, not as well in London. But we'll still see. And, you know, I just wish that he would take that step. I still think they're going to have to get an edge guy anyway. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here. You know, best case scenario, Tyson Campbell gets it. He learns how to locate the ball and they feel comfortable that he can be a corner. Best case scenario is that Andre Sisko finally gets on the field and we get an opportunity to see what this man can do. Best case scenario, Ben Barch now with AJ Can out for the remainder of the year proves to everyone that he is going to be a starting guard from here on out. Best case scenario, Walker Little gets an opportunity, and I don't want it to happen because of an injury, and that's what's weird about all this. I'm not wishing for an injury, but I want to see what the guy can do. And you got 11 games left for it. So those are the things that you're looking for. You know, more with Jamal Agnew, who's improving. You know, run the football, for crying out loud. Run it, run it, run it. Let me, before I hit this break, let me look this up because you need to know. You look at James Robinson right now. This man is phenomenal. It's amazing they didn't get him the football early on. It was just really kind of bizarre, you know. And Travis Etienne's going to help this football team immensely next year. There's no doubt about it. But James Robinson is your bell cow. He is right now seventh in the league in rushing. All right, let's see. Four of the six ahead of him have played an extra game, seven, compared to Robinson's six. So he's sixth in rushing with 460 yards. How about attempts, you ask? How about attempts, Ballou? Where are you at? Come on. 15th in the league with attempts. He's actually tied for 15th with Chuba Hubbard. So, you know, you do the math. 15th, tied for 15th in carries, 7th overall in yardage, average, you ask. Okay, I'm here for you. Let me find it. You know, get rid of all these D. Eskridge, wide receiver, 11 yards. We're looking at running backs here. Just running backs is what we need, for crying out loud. Tony Pollard, 61 carries, 366 yards, an average of 6 for Dallas. That is number one. Number two, Nick Chubb, 5.8 yards a carry. Tied for third, James Robinson and Jonathan Taylor, 5.5 yards a tote. Give him the football. Let's put our final touches on this bad boy. Get you ready for tomorrow, and I hope to see you out at Wing It. I haven't been there in a little while, but I heard that the Bills Mafia overtook Wing It a few years ago when they came in here and got steamrolled in that 10-3 thriller. Where were you when Bortles went back to pass and Bortles in the back of the end zone hit Ben Koyak?
Yes.
I mean, wow, what a game that was. A 10-3 final. Jalen had the pick. But I heard that Bills Mafia just overtook Wing It. We're going to take it back tomorrow night. We'll be out there 7 to 9, a party sponsored by Miller Lite. We'll have tickets. You can register to win. So we hope to see you out there. Then again on Thursday, 6 to 8, Mr. Chubby's in Pontevedra.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, so much for my opinion on stretching out Charlie Morton tonight. He's out. He gets 7 outs, 2 1/3. 44 pitches, A.J. Minter in. Now, I don't know if he was injured. Again, I'm doing a show here, and I just looked up, and they go to the lefty. The face of lefty in Alvarez. So, in Alvarez, man, did he kill the Red Sox. He hit about 500. Valdez got knocked out, 2+. Could not get anything going in the third inning. 8 hits, 5 runs. Walked a batter, allowed 2 home runs. Soler hit one, and Duvall with a homer. Garcia, and now... 8-8, you have a report for us? He limped off the field, Charlie Morton?
Yeah, according to a report, he got a strikeout but hurt himself on the last pitch and came out the game, limping off the field.
That's too bad. It was an opportunity here tonight for him to eat some innings for Braves fans. Minter gets the final out of the third, but, I mean, that's nine outs. You got to get 18 more outs. And this Houston offense pounds the baseball. They were among league leaders in most runs scored this year, you know, per game on the average. So we'll see what ends up happening there. You know, I don't want to bring up old wounds, you know. Every once in a while, you got to let it go, right? Move on. Kind of like a Kardashian. They move on from a man like every 3 months. They know how to do it. We should be able to do it as sports fans, right? Learn how to move on.
But we never do.
But I watched Fournette again over the weekend. And it is just absolutely mystifying to me. Because, you know, here we are talking about James Robinson. Then we're talking about Travis Etienne. And for the record, I've always been one of those guys who feels you can find a running back. And James Robinson proved that. You can find a wide receiver. Okay? Well, I have said now that I am changing my opinion on that. Jacksonville has to go get themselves a number one wide receiver. When I look at Fournette, though, he's catching balls from Tom Brady. He's running it effectively. I mean, he's got 93 carries right now. We just talked about Robinson. What does he have, 78 or 80 or something like that? But anyway, my point is this. I think Doug Marrone made two moves when he was here. I think Doug Marrone was responsible for peddling Ronnie Harrison and Leonard Fournette. And the reason being, Harrison was part of that clique with Jalen, and, you know, Leonard Fournette, I really believe you can sit here and say he was not going to be a good teammate during a losing season. I agree with that. And I always literally liked Leonard. I mean, there were times that man was hilarious, okay? But I just think they looked at him and said, he's not what we want in our locker room. And obviously, they went on to lose 15 straight games. But I can't get over the fact they got nothing for this guy. And I don't care if he was selected number four in the draft. I'm looking what he did during the 2019 season. And I think a lot of us out there forget what he did. In 15 games, he carried the ball 265 times for 1,152 yards. All right, 4.3 per, 3 touchdowns. He also, in 2019, caught 76 balls out of the backfield for 522 yards. His rookie season, he caught 36. His second season, he caught 22. So let's add that up. That's 58. He caught 76 in 2019. 522 yards and 1,152 yards. That's 1,600. He put up 1,674 yards in 15 games. And you got nothing for him. Nothing. Hell, you didn't get a bag of balls for him. You caught him. That reeks. It does. There's really no other way to say it. And you know, that falls on Dave Caldwell. That falls on Tom Coughlin. That falls on Doug Marrone. And they're gone now. But it's things like that that destroy a franchise. The fourth pick in the draft. You know? Was that the Deshaun Watson draft? Was that the Patrick Mahomes draft? I believe it was. And listen, I'm happy as can be. The fact now that, you know, Trevor Lawrence is the quarterback of this football team. Look at this right here. And teams make mistakes all the time. That's what's great about this. You look back on it, like, what were they thinking? Myles Garrett, top pick overall. All right. Mitch Trubisky, too. Was he a backup in Buffalo? Solomon Thomas, third. Leonard Fournette, fourth. Corey Davis, fifth. Wow, by Tennessee. Jamal Adams, sixth. We'll see him this weekend. He's already been moved from New York to Seattle. Mike Williams, Christian McCaffrey, John Ross. Ninth overall. Whatever happened to John Ross? He did like nothing. And you had Patrick Mahomes at 10 and Deshaun Watson at 12. Just incredible. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm not going to mention this again. I don't know why I just felt like I had to, but I mean, that is crazy. You drafted a running back at number 4. Yeah, and I remember sitting here, and we were going back and forth, and I was working with T-Wig, and we're like, man, get Dalvin Cook. Get him in the second round. He's a better football player. You need a big power back. Oh, okay. Okay. Now, Dalvin Cook's had some injury situation. Oh, Blue, you're just a Florida State homer. You want Dalvin Cook here because sure. There you go. Yeah. I mean, bring all the Florida State guys over here, right? That's the way I'm going to do business with the Jaguars. The fact that he's a Florida State guy, come on over here. Are you kidding me? Dalvin Cook's the best running back I've ever seen at Florida State. It's not even Warwick Dunn's close. But Dalvin Cook was better. Dalvin Cook, even when that Florida State offensive line started to get bad, he was phenomenal. So I'm sorry if I did that to you, but I just can't believe they couldn't even get a freaking conditional seventh-round pick for Leonard Fournette. They got literally nothing for him. And he put up nearly 1,700 yards of offense. Yeah, yep. Let's let it go, people. You hear me? Let's let it go.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I appreciate all the feedback tonight. What movie ended up getting the most votes? Shining?
Shining got the most votes. A lot of comments definitely on The Shining, also The Exorcist. But somebody agreed with you earlier in the show, Rick, that Jaws wanted being one of the more scary movies.
Yeah, very smart individual right there. You know what's interesting? They filmed that, you know, right off of Cape Cod, a little island called Martha's Vineyard. And it was a few years ago. There was a shark attack right there, right where they filmed the movie.
I think the only scary movie, and I didn't know it was classified as a scary movie until later. I think the only scary movie I saw was like, I Know What You Did Last Summer or something like that.
I enjoyed those. I was like Jennifer Love Hewitt
yeah.
and all that. Yeah, I got into all that stuff. Yeah, good stuff. You ready to try some Wing It Wings tomorrow night?
Yeah. I went by there earlier today. They said also to come by tomorrow morning. So I'll be doing that as well. Nice spot. Hope to see a lot of individuals out there. Come chat it up with us, man. Come on, like we love seeing you guys.
What you got a call back?
Yeah.
It's like you're auditioning for a movie or something.
Yeah. The original individual that I guess I was supposed to see, he was at their other location.
Oh.
So he said, come back tomorrow and we'll try to, all right. Get everything set in stone.
Yeah, we'll see you out there tomorrow night, 7 to 9, party sponsored by Miller Lite. That'll be Wednesday. Wing It, Old St. Augustine Road. Braves up 5-0, middle of the fourth, game one of the World Series. Folks, do appreciate it. Have a great night. Again, RJ Saunders and Rick Ballew tomorrow night, 7 to 9, Wing It on Old St. Augustine Road. We will see you out there from 7 to 9 on a Wednesday. Have a great evening.